Hello, welcome to the Incubator Podcast. This is your co-host, Abir Saran.
And this is Darren Boyd. Today, we're going to be talking to Alex Lawrence of Sysdig. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time introducing both Alex and Sysdig because Sysdig is one of those companies that we're really, really excited about because they do a lot of things and they do it at an incredible depth. So first off on Alex, we love talking to Alex. He's a builder. He's an evangelist. He's a teacher. He's a principal security architect at Sysdig. Very, very interesting to speak to. So we're all going to benefit from speaking to Alex today. So we're
excited about
that.
Stop making him
blush. Yeah, we're going to make him blush. And then, but before we turn over the mic to you, Alex, we definitely want to introduce Sysdig as well. So Sysdig's been around since 2013, right? They're valued at over $2.5 billion. So very, very powerful company. And part of the reason is they do a few things very, very well. So they're in the cloud security space. They're in the container security space. They're in the monitoring space. But before we go into any of that, I do want to point out that Loris DiGiovanni, founder, CTO, incredible background and incredible pedigree. And I think it's really important to discuss because, I mean, he's at Riverbed. He's got deep networking roots. But he also open sourced Sysdig originally as a troubleshooting tool. He's been involved with Wireshark. He's been involved with WinPCAP. But a deep, deep commitment to open source. And I know that most of the people listening to our podcast, our install base is very excited about open source and that commitment. And that DNA is pervasive throughout everything that Sysdig has been doing. So we're really excited to have you, Alex. We're really excited to get into Sysdig and everything they do. So why don't we turn it over to you first? I know that was a little blush of an intro. We're going to get into all those details fairly granular. But Alex, if you wouldn't mind just maybe doing your intro, And then teeing up Sysdig however you would like to do so, and then we'll get into a little bit of the discussion.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm Alex Lawrence. I'm a principal security architect here at Sysdig. I have a very weird background, but that has proven to be pretty helpful throughout my career. I spent a long time in higher ed and K-12 doing IT work all over the place, right? They're always under budget, so you do many, many things. And because of that, you're heavily involved in the open source world. So a lot of my background initially was in identity management and user authorization, authentication, all that type of stuff. And then kind of moved into the other side of the IT world, kind of helping people solve different issues. And then when I started looking at what I wanted to do next in my career, after one of the companies I was at got bought, I was looking around and had some friends go to this little tiny company called Sysdig. I was like, well, you know, why are they going there? What's going on with this? And so, like you said, you know, was doing my research and found this to be a pretty interesting company, mostly because of the company founder, right? Loris DiGiovanni and his background with Wireshark. I was extremely familiar with that technology back when it was actually called Ethereal, doing random things with that, getting, you know, TCP dumps and packet catchers and all those things. And so I was like, okay, well, if this is what Loris is doing now, you know, what's special about this company? You know, what's going on here? And the easiest way I can say it, and excuse me if you're listening to this and you're not too nerdy, but generally the perspective to me is that Sysdig is to containers as Wireshark is to switches. Right. So Wireshark plugged into a SPAN port. It grabbed packets. The cool thing about packets is they don't lie, right? They tell you exactly what's going on. And you could build really interesting observability tools and security tools based off of that data source and the richness of that data source. Basically, Sysdig was a re-envisioning of how do you do something similar, but in a world where you don't have a switch, in a world where you don't have access to an Ethernet interface, right? How do you instrument something as richly as what a packet could do when you can't plug into that? And so that was kind of the problem statement that Loris was taking on when kind of coming up with what Sysdig is today. And really it was leveraging streaming data sources as a source of truth. So initially, like you guys said, Sysdig started off as an open source tool that was capturing system calls. So system calls to Sysdig are that single source of truth because just like a packet, a system call doesn't lie. And we could build really interesting tools based off of data contained in those system calls, right? It's not just about packets anymore. It's about, you know, actual operations on a node, metrics coming from that particular node, right? You know, how much CPU is being used, memory, how many, you know, file IO is being hit. You can even get down to things like, well, you know, what process opened up that socket? So you can start interrelating significant depth of events together and kind of grow from there. And from that point, we've kind of evolved as a product to be able to do more and more and keep contributing them back to the open source community. So initially, you know, it was all about Sysdig and the open source version of Sysdig. There's even a really cool curses UI, if you're into that. I don't know if anybody else is, but that was actually one of the big reasons I thought it was awesome back in the day before I was even working at the company. And then it evolved to Falco, and right, Falco's using the same style of instrumentation to gather system calls, but look at it from a security context, not necessarily from a metric-based context. And then that engine kept getting worked on and pushed and pushed, and so it got released to the, given to the CNCF. The community's taken it and has done some really amazing things with it. And then Sysdig's been a core contributor back to the Falco project as well. I think the latest release is, what is it, 0.31? And it's called Gray Falcon, I believe. And it has a new tech that Sysdig had kind of come up with about a year ago that allows you to instrument other data sources, right? It's a whole plugin architecture built around Falco that allows users to basically take HTTP-oriented data or other types of data sources, conform it to a format that Falco understands, and do streaming detection on those things too. So it's not just system calls. It's also Kubernetes audit logs. It's CloudTrail logs. You know, any cloud service logs, put them here. There's a implementation for gathering Okta logs, right? There's all sorts of things you can now do with this streaming technology that you couldn't, you know, do before, and gives you kind of a new and novel way to do runtime security across all sorts of environments. So I'll stop talking there. But
no, that's huge. That's and it's really helpful. Thanks for the introduction. So at the risk of, because I really would love to do this in a kind of a sequential manner, talk about each of kind of the products that you go into. But before we do that, I want to double click on some of the open source stuff. At the risk of kind of jumping around in those various products, you spoke with Falco. I think just before this podcast, I took a look at DevStats. I was looking at some of the contributors. AWS is high on that list. IBM, Cisco, VMware. There's lots of folks that are contributing to that platform. It is the security camera for your runtime security. So very, very interesting platform unto itself. But beyond that, I've seen the integrations with Cloud Custodian, right? We're a big fan of Cloud Custodian and everything it does as well. We've seen the integrations with OPA. There's a lot of things you're doing in that space in general. Is there anything we should be paying attention to or speak about with that commitment? Because I think it's a wonderful commitment. All of those technologies are pervasive in almost every single one of our customers, at least, and they're all very significant. But one, like the rally of the community is important. I love to see that degree of contribution. CNCF is an organization that we follow closely. We follow a lot of their technologies and speak about their technologies. So one, it's a great testament to what Sysdig is doing. I think that is important. But is there anything we should be looking at in terms of like why Cloud Custodian, why OPA? Is there anything beyond the commitment to open source which made you look at some of those vehicles potentially as partnerships, integration points, and things you're building on top of?
Yeah, that's kind of really a core philosophy here at Sysdig. We basically view the next iteration of security, the next era of security, especially in cloud native, is open source, right? It's no longer something that you depend on a particular vendor who's, you know, particularly good at one little thing, right? It's kind of more of a community driven notion. If you think about the way attacks happen today and the way things are at risk today, it's, I would say, significantly more variable than it was in the past, right? If you think about a traditional data center, it was like a castle, right? You had an ingress point that was defined. You had egress that was specifically defined as well. You knew exactly what your perimeter was. It was very simplistic in a lot of ways in how you approach security in that paradigm. When you move to the cloud, it's a lot more like a carnival, right? And it's good to use the term security camera because that's the way we look at it too, right? Like every individual service, every individual group, they all have kind of their own little fiefdom inside the carnival. And so they have the ability to define their own ingress and egress points. They have the ability to define what services are running in those locations. And as a security organization, you're supposed to translate what you used to do in a castle to the carnival now out front, the castle, right? And so how do you secure something like that? How do you go forward with something like that? And frankly, the only way to survive is to have it be a community effort, right? You can't be on your own anymore. I think it's proven time and time again that the people who are out to do harm or out to get data are working together collaboratively, and they're sharing information, right? They're pushing stuff out in a community of their own and talking about how they can, you know, solve the other side of the problem. And I think a lot of the people in our own security space, they're not embracing that as much, right? Like, the traditional security methodology is to not share, is to not be open. It's to kind of be a bit more secretive on how you do your special sauce to have a competitive advantage. And I think that methodology is eroding, right? And Sysdig's one of those companies that fundamentally believes to have a strong security posture, it needs to be community driven, right? It needs to be open source driven. And that's why you see us being involved in so many different projects out there, and even to the point where we integrate them into our solution, because there's a lot to be gained from that, both from our perspective as well as giving back to the community.
Yeah, that's great to hear, Alex. And given that pedigree, Sysdig has primarily focused on container security, or has taken that pedigree, integrated into container security, cloud security, and the monitoring or observability within that domain. So if we take each of those, how is Sysdig differentiating or taking that knowledge and pedigree from the open source community, engineering it right into your container offering vis-a-vis other potential offerings that may exist out there? What truly differentiates Sysdig?
Yeah, what makes Sysdig different is the maniacal focus on containers and Kubernetes, right? It's not that it doesn't work in other capacities. It certainly does. But we've always had a very, very strong focus on the container ecosystem. I mean, I've been now at Sysdig roughly 4 years, and I can tell you, you know, 4 years ago, there were not that many people who were heavily adopting Kubernetes and containers. They certainly existed, but they weren't nearly as common as they are today. And I think what makes Sysdig different is that focus. When we look at how do you instrument a container, right? It's a very base level thing, but there's a number of ways to do it. And a lot of those ways that you could approach doing that instrumentation somewhat breaks the paradigm of how you operate and build containers. And so our solution takes that into strong consideration and looks at ways to be able to gather data without having to put additional stuff in or adjacent to your workloads, right? We're not forcing people to drop additional libraries or binaries into a container. We're not putting stuff in a sidecar on every single existing container out there, right? We are looking at this from the actual kernel itself and gathering telemetry from that point. It allows us to do stuff, again, very deeply and very richly without having to be an encumbrance on the overall architecture of the solution or the infrastructure running it.
Yeah, there's something else I saw too, Alex, and hopefully you can walk us through this because this one's pretty powerful as well. I was looking at Risk Spotlight. Mm-hmm. So the ability to not only look, like, you're not just scanning a container at runtime and saying, oh, check it out, I found these 100 packages, 50 of them have vulnerabilities, let's talk about the CVEs, let's talk about mitigation. You're actually looking at what is truly loaded at runtime and evaluating the risk profile and doing some prioritization as well. Can you walk us through some of that Risk Spotlight? I believe it's a reasonably new capability that you've added. Maybe that's not entirely true, but it's such a foundational one, because the one thing we hear often is, hey, there's too much noise in some of these vulnerability scanners. And again, because of the granularity you have at runtime, I think this is a really interesting capability that you've introduced that I would love to hear a little bit more of.
Yeah, and that really comes from, again, how we instrument, right? Since we are at the kernel, and everything ultimately on a Linux machine is a kernel call, we're able to see every single process executed, you know, every library being referenced, all that data is there and exposed to us. So when we do a vulnerability analysis of a particular container, it isn't just a raw list of packages installed and vulnerabilities found within those packages. Anybody can do that, right? That's kind of table take stuff. But how do you make those things actionable? And there's two key elements to that. The one we've always had for quite some time is context, right? Context is king in the land of Kubernetes. Because if you don't know where something is running, or you don't know where it's running from or who's responsible for it, who cares about the vulnerability report, right? Like, if you're just running a vulnerability scan and you're popping out, you know, 1,000 different vulnerabilities across your cluster, that means nothing unless they're actionable, right? So knowing who's responsible for those applications based off the metadata and the surrounding environment, that context is paramount, right? It's incredibly important. The second problem you have to solve is, now that I know who is in charge of those vulnerabilities, right? Who owns that application? How do they know what they should do with them, right? So a lot of tools will say suggested fix, right? You can update to the newest image and remove this many vulnerabilities. You could update to this particular version of a package and you're going to eliminate this vulnerability. That's all great. It's all wonderful. But how do I know which of those are the most important things to do, right? And the way we look at it is like, well, we have a lot of data about this running environment, you know, down to the individual modules being executed, you know, within this particular container. Wouldn't it be cool if we enriched our scanning with that data as well? And so it allows our customers to basically check a box and it'll auto prioritize which vulnerabilities you should be able to take care of first based off of ones that are actually being used, right? Mm-hmm. We're not stating that you shouldn't remediate the other ones. They obviously exist within that container and they are present. There are things that could be done to make them be accessible. But if you're looking for what do I take care of first, if I've got a list of 100, let's take care of the 20 that are actively loaded in memory, that are actively being used. And then let's address the rest.
Yeah.
That's effectively what that feature is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's important. A tremendous benefit to the application teams for sure, having to not have to self-prioritize and go through each of them and spend countless cycles there to get these vulnerabilities fixed. Is this part of the Falco solution, or is Falco on its own, Alex, in terms of the vulnerability detection, threat detection aspect of things?
Yeah, so Falco is a piece of the puzzle, right? So in this context, this solution that we were just talking about, the kind of risk spotlight stuff, that's the holistic platform of Sysdig.
Okay.
Falco itself is just the runtime detection component. And so Falco is the CNCF project. It allows you to install across your nodes and be able to effectively do kind of expression matching against things running on that node. And so it can detect that content and let you know about it. Basically, what we're doing in Vulnerability Spotlight is taking that runtime data that we have, not focusing on the detection side, but focusing on the, you know, what is this object and what is its relationship to the container? And then leveraging that to enhance the vulnerability scans that are also happening.
Awesome. So building on that, so we talked about container security and as one major aspect of the platform. The other is now cloud security, where we get into compliance, code scanning, and all of that functionality. Alex, could you elaborate on Sysdig's implementation of that? There's quite a bit of focus these days in the marketplace in terms of ensuring compliance. How does Sysdig exactly do it?
Yeah, so there's a few things at play on this one. And so if we talk just strictly about the cloud itself, there's two major components from the Sysdig perspective. There's static analysis, right? Cloud custodian. And that does a really great job of looking for vulnerabilities, looking for where there are misconfiguration, looking for things that are kind of messed up in that context, and then being able to remediate those either automatically in Cloud Custodian or, you know, by other methodologies. The other side of that is kind of a runtime aspect of it, right? So everybody heavily focuses on the static analysis, the CSPM aspect of the world. Not many people have looked too heavily at the runtime aspect of CSPM. And that's somewhat by virtue of there just not being a lot out there to do that. Historically, people will take CloudTrail logs, right? Things that are looking at each individual service. They'll send them off to some sort of data lake, a SIM, you know, whatever they're using. And then they'll have some sort of query that processes every once in a while to report back results of those cloud logs, right? Basically looking for again, misconfigurations or new things popping up that might be a problem. It seems somewhat like, you know, a snapshot with a CSPM tool, but it's doing it against a CloudTrail log. There's a lot more value in those logs than how we treat them today, right? And that's actually the core functionality behind Falco 031, Gray Falcon thing, because it allows you to effectively route those logs to the HTTP engine in front of Falco and then do live detection on that stream of data as well. So just like Falco can detect, you know, somebody opening up a shell in a container, modifying etc password, or, you know, making a cron task or something like that, this allows you to, in the same real-time way, tell when somebody logs in without MFA to your cloud. Somebody creates a new user, permissions that user with root access or a root AIM profile, deletes a cluster, makes a cluster, you know, open decrypts an S3 bucket, makes an S3 bucket accessible to the world, right? All of these things are detections and logs that happen in that CloudTrail world. With this technology, basically we're saying static analysis is important. You got to be doing it. You know, it's the table stakes thing of CSPM. But I think there was a report out of IBM in 2020 that basically stated the average cost of a breach worldwide is $4.3 million. And every hour, every minute that breach is undetected, it costs more. And then we also know from a similar report that the cloud is being targeted as of 2020 more than the on-prem world, right? So if we kind of go back to the early Carnival analogy, we now know that it's hard to secure a cloud because everybody's involved, everybody's doing their own thing, and breaches are expensive, and they're being targeted in the cloud more often than not these days. So how do I secure that, right? How do I do that appropriately and quickly? And that's the impetus behind that release of Falco with the HTTP engine, because now we can say, well, static scanning is great, but that's not fast enough, right? Putting it into a SIM and getting a report every 24 hours, that's not fast enough. We need to be doing these things in real time. And if we can open source it, if we can give it to the world, everybody can be writing rules against CloudTrail to build detections, to look for misconfigurations, to look for things happening in real time, so we can react appropriately and not have that be delayed.
I'm really curious, what's the real workflow look like in that aspect? So like, do you have any plugins to an IDE? Do you have plugins to various declarative languages? Or as I'm developing and as I'm putting assets in the world, so you're scanning some of my code, and I'd love to understand what that means, but where am I detecting some of this as a developer? Because I know that you have a philosophy of shift left, you're supporting some of that behavior. What does this practically look like for someone that's actually using this capability?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And the answer is it can look like about 1,000 different things, right? It's very flexible to fit into how people want to operate. I don't think anybody in the community has written a particular IDE plugin yet for it. There's no reason why you couldn't. But I think a lot of people are effectively thinking of it kind of like... almost like test-driven development, right? Where you write your unit test and then you write your code to conform to the test. Mm-hmm. Effectively, you could be looking at this from a write the security posture I'm looking for and then make sure my applications are architected in that similar context. And so in the world of Falco, all of these rules, all of these detections are just YAML, right? It's a standard language. It's not overly complex. It's fairly easy to understand and read, and you can effectively write these rules in YAML and push them to those Falco agents that are doing that level of detection in that cloud world. So a developer could basically say, I'm going to spin up this application. I want to make sure that only this AIM policy is used. If any other AIM policy is used to access this application, that should be a violation, right? So they can then write a Falco rule, a YAML file, that would have that detection in there and upload it, push it to the agent, and let it start detecting that type of thing.
Building on that point about writing rules, right? So there's an aspect of maybe the static view where there's a defined set of rules that exist. Is there things that are out of the box, if you will, on the platform that says Sysdig's going to analyze this rule set against these compliance frameworks and spit these out as standard rules? And given the runtime nature or Falco aspect of input, that influences the dynamic rules and or brings that to the forefront where a security team, an application team then says, okay, for these types of situations, we will need to be specific and start integrating those as additional rules. Do I have that right in terms of kind of like the workload of writing rules and what's out of the box versus how much effort is put into customizing rule development? Because that's a significant effort that we see across our clients as well.
Yeah, that's actually one of the big value props of the enterprise solution, right? There is a lot of work we have done internally to build out a significant set of rules to be able to do these types of detections. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot of work with a lot of our customers who have particular needs, you know, be they PCI related needs, SOC 2 needs, FedRAMP needs, just want to follow 800-190, you know, NIST guidelines. All of those things we've taken into consideration, and we've actually done a lot of work to map the rules we have that we build to various compliance frameworks, various attack, like MITRE ATT&CK framework, things like that, so that when people want to apply rules to a particular environment, all those already exist. And more importantly, those tags feed through the entire system. So if I want to go, if I'm a security professional and I want to be able to see, you know, events that pertain to a particular cluster that are PCI compliant, I can look for any PCI based rule violation in that particular environment, and I can get that data back easily. Conversely, I could sit that off to a particular SIM or a location with proper tags or, you know, some sort of alerting mechanism as well. And so it gives you all of the insight for your workflows and base rules that you'd have to build yourself otherwise. And it's something that we've spent a lot of time doing. And the nice thing is that if you've already are a Falco user, you can bring the stuff you have today into Sysdig and it works out of the box, right? It's Falco at the end of the day. And so it doesn't hamper your ability to make new stuff or bring what you've already built.
So I hope all the people listening so far get an appreciation for just how deep this goes. I want to pick on another topic that Sabir and I have talked to of various point solutions in this space, which is the CIEM, right? So Cloud Infrastructure Entitlement Management. Because you do almost everything, this is another capability that you've enabled, part of that richness of all of the depth that you can see. But this is also a kind of a fascinating space as well, because now we're using graph mathematics, we're looking at triadic closures, we're making some determinants, and this is yet another capability that's offered by Sysdig. Can you walk us through a little bit of the entitlement management capability, what you're doing in that space, and how it relates to maybe the greater cloud security aspect?
Yeah, it's a thing that people get out of the box with us as well if they're a cloud security customer. Effectively, we are going through and looking at your permission sets and looking for violations in multiple dimensions, right? It's again, it's about static analysis and looking at what stuff is configured as and saying, hey, you know, here's a policy that's set up that allows, you know, admin access, and you've got 60 users permissioned to that particular policy. Maybe that's not a good thing, right? You know, who is in scope of that? How could I do this better, right? How could I build a policy of least access? We can help automate those types of things for those customers. Conversely, you know, again, looking at those CloudTrail logs, we can tell when a user has that permission and does something. So like I had one user, you know, bless their hearts. They're only like a 3-person shop. And I would venture to say probably 75% of their tasks after they installed Sysdig were showing up as running as root. And that's not the best way to do it, right? But at some point you got to do your job and you got to survive. And so it's good to have a tool like this that they can say, okay, I've got clearly over-permissioned users, over-permissioned tasks running in my environment. Let's go look at that policy. And now let's figure out about that policy, what can we take away, but not break things, right? I want to say, this is the thing I want to model on, and I want to build a policy that lets this still function, but lets it be a little more locked down. That's what we're trying to enable our users for, to basically have the data and be able to make good decisions. At the end of the day, it's not something we can force on them, but we can certainly make it be accessible to them and hopefully help them figure out what path they should be taking.
Yeah. I'm going to bounce around a little bit here too, Alex, because I've seen Sysdig in action. There's so much context propagation. The UI is so capable and so helpful to navigate. Do you find that most of your users are using the UI because of how much rich data and context is stitched together? Or are people using it in different ways, maybe not favoring the AI or the UI? What do some of those workflows look like? Because I can personally say you can really drill down to any level, to any area, and you can go sideways, you can go up, down. It's a phenomenal experience because of that context stitching and propagation. How are most people using this really in the wild, maybe for larger customers?
Yeah, that varies wildly on the persona of the individual. And so even within a single customer, we will have people use it in very different ways. And we've tried to be very flexible about how people can use it, right? Like Sysdig has a Terraform module you can use if you want to configure and roll everything out with just code. It's got a Swagger API across pretty much everything, right? So if you want to do stuff with API calls, you can do that. If you want to use the UI, it's been worked on significantly to make it be very user-friendly in order to be able to see and visualize things in different ways. And so we have customers who will never log in, and they'll just do everything as code, and they'll dump all their data into a third-party interface that they're used to looking at that they like. Conversely, we'll have users who log in and basically click through everything because that's the way they like to go about it. I think we spent a lot of time in our UX the last couple of years building it out in a way that has different personas in mind, right? For people who are very heavy on vulnerability remediation, they're going to be presented with a UI that fits kind of a workflow they're used to. If it's a security professional looking for vulnerabilities, there's going to be a UI that's really tailored toward helping them discover vulnerabilities or problems in their environment that they wouldn't otherwise see, right? Like there's a feature in the interface called Insights in Secure. And Insights is all about bubbling up all of the data in a way that's very visual and lets you find the things you might not see otherwise. So I use the term bubble up because it's literally bubbles that are showing on a screen. And the more often the event's happening, the bigger that bubble is in the respective location it's in. And then you can redraw that different ways. You could do it from a user perspective. You can do it from a resource perspective, like Kubernetes enriched. You can do it marrying those two things together. There's different ways to look at it. And that allows you to catch things you might not see otherwise, right? If someone logs in, deletes something, and then goes and sends, you know, 500 CloudTrail events, it's going to be really easy to miss those single events that occur by flooding it out with other stuff. In the visual representation, it allows you to see those point things that might actually matter and kind of help keep the fluff out of the way so you can see the things you care about.
Yeah, maybe. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that was maybe a good segue, Alex, when we talk about visualization, the user interface, the user experience, into perhaps the third major value proposition or product feature set that Sysdig has, which is around monitoring or observability in within the container space and potentially beyond. So wanted to maybe dive into that, if Darren, that's okay with you. You
know, I was going to kind of go there. I wanted to talk about PromQL, but I think, we can connect those two ideas because the amount of information you can pull out with things like PromQL, like just a phenomenal degree of strength. But yes, I think that's a fair place to go next.
Yeah. So everything on the monitoring side, everything stored in our backend on that side, the observability piece is all stored in a PromQL compliant way, right? And the reason that's key is that PromQL is an extremely powerful query language. If you haven't been using it, you know, it's worth taking a dive into. It's a little overwhelming at first, but it gets easier as time goes on. And it lets you do some really fun stuff, right? There's some really advanced mathematical capabilities built into the language that lets you do novel things. Like we have a pretty robust blog here at Sysdig that does a remarkable job of not being very marky. It's very kind of matter of fact and extremely nerdy. And I think like 2 years ago, I wrote a blog for fun around Christmas time about cooking a ham with Sysdig. And we built a bunch of IoT sensors and we hooked those up into Sysdig with Prometheus Remote Write, and then sent a bunch of data to the back end about a ham cooking in my oven at home, right? And then I used PromQL to graph the ham. And then more importantly, since you have to glaze a ham over time, predict when I needed to go back and do that, right? So we used a function in Prometheus or in PromQL called predict linear. It's a linear regression algorithm to kind of project out a metric, and use that on my temperature metric for my IoT sensor to basically tell me when it was going to hit a particular temperature and when I would need to go base the ham. So I strictly did it based off of what Sysdig told me to do. I didn't follow anything but that, and it was a very delicious ham. but because of like those types of things, you can do ridiculous stuff with the product, right? No one would monitor their ham with Sysdig, but you can do it, right? And that's the key thing. It allows you to push metrics into Sysdig. They can be StatsD metrics. They can be Prometheus metrics. Can be whatever, right? Whatever we ingest. And it stores it in a way that you can query with PromQL and do novel things with that. We have spent a ridiculous amount of time and effort making that function and adapt for how the backend works in our solution. And it's let us do some really novel things. Like we just released a feature in Monitor called Advisor that is the analogous thing of Insights in Secure, but it's called Advisor for Monitor. And it helps you troubleshoot and walk through your environment with different expressions to basically figure out what's going wrong, right? What's not working right about this particular application, cluster, deployment pod, whatever you need to look into. And it helps you kind of visualize all that in a informed way using the metrics and telemetry that pertain to that application. And it's all all powered by PromQL and Prometheus.
Well, I've certainly, like, I've asked you, you know, on a few occasions to, I've asked you just questions like, hey, Alex, here's a scenario. And I've seen you go through PromQL and surface the answers. So definitely get how powerful it is. But you also don't need to have or be adept in PromQL to get some of that value right out of the product itself. So can you walk through a little bit of that? Like, what can I get out of the box? And then where and when do I need to start looking at some of these advanced capabilities to introduce that into the environment? And are you trying to make that a little easier for folks to kind of consume along the way? Or is this really something that people should invest the time and start going down the path on?
And if I could just add as well, Alex, just to that, is how should an end user be looking at this from a monitoring observability standpoint? What are the confines? Is it targeted towards the development team, et cetera? Who else is looking at this or availing of this platform from a monitoring and slash observability standpoint?
Yeah. It's actually one of the key things that makes us pretty different in the market space, right? Most security vendors do security and they stop there. And we fundamentally believe that you cannot do security without observability, right? And the reason we feel that way is there's always going to be new vectors of attack, new things happening that you're not going to catch with a traditional security tool. You're typically going to see those things because a standard metric has suddenly changed, right? Your CPU profile is a standard deviation, you know, higher or lower than when it used to be. Your memory load has changed. The amount of file IO being written or read has changed, right? Those are all things you see in observability tools, not things you see in traditional security tools. And so if you're not doing observability on your infrastructure, you're missing a key pillar of making sure you have properly secured it, right? Like if it's a zero-day attack, you're not likely to catch that in a traditional security tool, right? There are ways to put stuff together that might give you an inclination of it, but this is another data point to be able to say, hey, you know, my CPU profile dramatically changed. Maybe I have a crypto miner on there, right? What processes are now executing on that box? And these are all questions you can ask and answer with the observability tool, right? Like there's dashboards and views in the product out of the box to see all the processes running in a particular container, namespace, node, you know, cluster. You can do that with network ports and network traffic. You can do that with file activity. You can be able to see, you know, suddenly my CPU profile is now different, right? There's heuristic-based alerts in the observability tool to basically be able to say that, hey, something's changed and I don't know why. This is maybe something you want to look into. And so you can start chaining these things together. And more importantly, the two products work together, right? When Secure, say, stops a container or Secure kills something that's going on, it puts an alert into the monitor interface, right? And that way, if your ops team is like, well, hey, you know, why did this thing suddenly stop? They can now understand that, oh, you know, someone tried to do something wrong. Let's make sure security knows about that. Conversely, if there is a, you know, a CPU change and they can't explain it, or they see a process running in a particular container that they shouldn't be or they're not used to seeing, they can alert the other direction. And so it allows a kind of synergistic view of the world because security doesn't stop at a securities tool, right? There's things in observability you only get there. And, you know, going back to your other question about what can you get out of the box, right? There's all sorts of things. There's things based on HTTP engines, stuff built around Java, stuff built on databases like MySQL, Postgres, stuff built around basically anything key under the sun you can think of that's a core application in the cloud native space. There's probably something out of the box for it in Sysdig. And if there's not, there's a really cool interface inside of it called integrations that allows you to install Prometheus exporters, right? And so if you're running like a RabbitMQ or you're running something else that's maybe a slightly less common, we've gone through the effort to say, hey, we can see there's this application running. Would you like to install this Prometheus exporter so you can get more data out of your application and have that be in the observability tool as well? So it's super flexible. There's a ton of PromQL out of the box you can click on that says, hey, try this query. You might like this one. Maybe this will be useful for your particular environment. And then I can help walk you through how to leverage that effectively, right? One of the really key things in our way of implementing Prometheus on our back end is a thing that's called extended label sets. And so you type in a metric like host underscore CPU underscore use or something like that. It'll then show you every single tag associated with that metric. So I can sort it by cluster, by namespace, by MAC address, by whatever I want that we see related to it. And it can then segment by that. Most tools make you have to figure out all that segmentation yourself. With our solution, there's no reason why we can't correlate that for you. Again, context is king. It means everything. We help auto-populate that data so you can then make your stuff more effective, more usable.
Yeah, there's probably not a high value question, but because you can do so much in the security space, because you can do so much in the observability space, where are you finding you're getting the most traction from? Is it because this is telemetry that can fly the plane? So are you finding that you're getting pulled in from the observability space first, and then it's bleeding into security once they find the value? Is it vice versa? Is it a 50-50? What does your go-to-market typically look like in the enterprise space, and how does that play out?
Yeah, it's evolved a lot over the years. When I first came here to Sysdig 4 years ago, it was probably like 70% observability, 30% security. And I would say it's probably flipped this at this point in time, right? 4 years later, it's much more focused on the security space, just because that's where people have the need, right? People are starting to adopt Kubernetes and containers at a much faster rate than they ever used to. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that people want to build cloud native applications, and they want to do it in a way that is portable, that they can work anywhere they want to put it, right? If you think about building an app today, you typically have to consider, well, what cloud am I going to go to? What services am I going to use? You know, what different things could I be tapping into? All of those questions effectively tie you into a particular vendor, a particular cloud. People don't want to be stuck with a particular cloud. You know, they don't want to re-architect an application just to move it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Kubernetes has basically provided a standard set of APIs to build across. And so I can build an application for Kubernetes, and I can run it on-prem. I can run it in Amazon, Google, Azure, IBM, you know, Oracle, anywhere I want. And that's why we're seeing, I think, more and more adoption, because developers want to do it this way. They want to build applications that are agnostic and just work. And then when they try to go, you know, say, hey, I built this thing, I refactored it. Oh, and by the way, it's a container now. It's not running as a EC2 node or a compute resource that I'm used to. So we have to go containerize this thing. Security says, oh, wait, hold up. You know, that's different than what we have been doing in the past. And we need different tools to support that. The stuff you've been using, the older legacy tools of the world, do not work the same way in containers as they do on VMs or on bare metal nodes. And so we're seeing more of that interest and more of that adoption today, because they've come around to the fact that containers are here to stay. It definitely is the future of things. And we need to secure these things in a cloud native way. And that's kind of why we see more on that security side than we do on the observability side these days, at least in my opinion.
Yeah,
simple question. Maybe the last question here, Alex. If you're a customer client, so you can have access to Sysdig from an open source perspective, a non-enterprise offering, and then there's obviously the enterprise. Is that correct? How can I consume Sysdig or get greater exposure?
Yeah. So the easiest way is to go look up Falco, right? Falco.org. Plenty of documentation on there to get Falco set up and start working with it and operating and running it. Mm-hmm. And it's a great entry point into doing all sorts of different things. Conversely, if you're not into kind of build it yourself, build the workflows yourself, there is the enterprise solution, and you can just, you know, trial that and mess with those things as well. Gives you full access to everything to play with and kind of see and kick the tires. If you want to do it on observability, there is an open source Sysdig, right? Not to be confused with the enterprise Sysdig, basically little s Sysdig versus big s Sysdig. And then that lets you do a number of things on a particular node. And you can leverage that with like the Cursus UI or whatnot, or just, you know, go play with Prometheus and kind of start learning on that side too. So.
Awesome. Well, Alex, we really appreciate your time today. It's been enlightening. And hopefully, you know, we'll come back to you with some more questions, and hopefully our audience members enjoyed this discussion. And if there's questions you have for us or Alex, please feel free to reach out. Darren, anything?
Oh, that's good. Alex, always, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Great.